Hello and welcome to the Lifestyle Podcast, a place where we talk about all things holistic living, personal growth, mindset, career, and more. Here we have open-minded conversations that will inspire you to lead with your intuition and go from dreaming to doing. I'm your host, Erin, and I cannot wait to share this journey with you. So let's hop on into today's episode. Hello, welcome back to a brand new episode of the podcast. For today's episode, I'm sitting down with Wendy Robinson, and she is an artist who took her art to YouTube about a year ago. And I actually found her through YouTube because I was just searching up some stuff around journaling and art journaling, and one of her videos popped up, and I was just so drawn into her vibe, her aura, just this like sense of freedom that she has, and that she is just doing her thing. And I, you know, watched so many of her videos and I just got totally sucked in, and I loved how she was just so fluid in her art and the way that she expressed herself through art journaling. And I just found it fascinating. And I was like, I need to get Wendy on the podcast because I just think she's one of those people who is a great example of someone who has built an incredible personal brand for themselves, who's followed their intuition, and has really just let their true self shine through. And the fact that she really, really did follow her heart throughout her career. She was a full-time teacher, and then she ended up transitioning into becoming an artist full-time. So I just found it really, really inspiring. I thought you would really connect with her as well, and just her whole vibe, because it is very calming. And I'm all about the calm vibes. In a world of the internet that seems like everything is just chaos, bring me all of the calm. And Wendy definitely exudes the calm. So I really hope you enjoy this episode, and I will catch you on the other side with a few of my favorite takeaways. So thank you so much, Wendy, for joining me on the podcast today. I'm so excited to have you. As I mentioned, as we were chatting a little bit earlier, I'm a huge fan of everything that you do, but I would love for you to introduce yourself and let everyone know a little bit about your story, what it is that you do, and what brought you to where you are now.
I guess I'll kind of start with the past year and a bit, really, because that's where my life really shifted into like an online presence. And that's been really transformational in a way that I didn't really imagine. And so I've always been an artist, and I was a teacher for a long time. But then we kind of lost our minds, and myself and my partner, we sold our house and everything we owned, and we ran away in a van for several years, trying to put roots down, trying to find a place to call home, basically. And throughout that time, I did art journaling and art and creativity, and not a lot else really, apart from the travels and a lot of soul searching and inner work and that kind of thing. And at this point, I was in my sort of early to mid 40s when we set off. And I think that's quite a transformational time as well, big life transitions and things like that. But focusing on the last year and a half, I did have a part-time job before the lockdowns, and I was teaching an art class that I set up myself a couple of times a week. And things were kind of ticking along, but it didn't really light me up properly. It didn't bring me as much joy as I wanted in my life. So when the lockdowns hit, I just went online. I just took everything online and just was doing what I was doing anyway, but took it online. And then I think the YouTube has really sort of transformed my journey, because you can reach such a large audience on YouTube, and it's a really creative platform. And as much negativity as there is out there on social media, the positivity is there too. And I really looked for the positive, and that's what I got back, I think, that shone back at me. And so from there, it's kind of blown my mind, the community and the feedback and the lovely messages and all the things I get, all that feedback and love back has kind of taken me further and encouraged me to sort of show myself a little bit more. And so I don't really know how that's happened or why that's happened or anything like that. And I don't have all the tech algorithm type thing or anything like that, but I just wanted to be honest, vulnerable a little bit, and authentic. Yeah, it just felt really good. So I think that's just, I've just followed what felt good. I think that's kind of it in a nugget, if you like.
Yeah. And I think that's just so important. And you are like a perfect example of someone who is just so real, I feel. And I feel like that's probably why so many people were drawn to your YouTube channel initially, because you're just doing it differently. You're being so authentic. And I feel like the word authentic is just thrown around so much, but honestly,
I do.
Yeah. That's what you are. Like, you are just being your true self. And I think that draws people in to be like, oh, okay, she's doing her. And look at how, you know, all the success that's coming her way. And I think when you truly do like focus in on what makes you feel good, what mm-hmm. completely aligns with you, and you're not trying to please someone else or see like, oh, that seemed to have worked for someone else, I'm going to try to copy that. Like, no, you were just doing it because you truly enjoyed doing it. And then mm-hmm. things just, you know, the community comes to you because it is so real and raw. One thing I wanted to ask you about, because you were a full-time teacher back in the day before you transitioned to being a full-time artist, and I'd love to dive a little bit deeper into that and why you decided, because I mean, being a teacher, that's a great job, you know, you're pretty much set for life, you have all of the, like, it is one of those great jobs that people aspire to have, but you made the decision to leave that career behind and really follow your heart and transition into something completely different. So I'd love just to hear like a little bit of your thought process on that and what made you decide to be like, no, I need to make a shift in my life.
It's really funny actually, because tomorrow is my 10-year anniversary of what I call freeing my soul.
Oh, wow.
So about 11 years ago, so a year before I actually left, I decided I wanted to leave teaching. And I remember telling my partner, and he was always saying to me, just quit, just leave, just, you know, and without having a future plan, if you like, even financially. And at that point, we had a mortgage and commitments and things like that financially. And then I remember telling my mum as well. My mum's fantastic. She's one of my greatest inspirations, and she's definitely a hero to me. She sat and listened to me around her kitchen table up in Scotland in the mountains. And she said to me, well, what was the favorite job you ever had? And I said, I was so happy as a waitress when I was 18, 19. She was like, so you're telling me you're going to give up this teaching career and you want to do something like be a waitress? And I said, well, basically, yes, I want to follow my heart. I want to do what I love. And she said, good for you. That was amazing. So supportive. And so I had this, you know, a really close important people around me supporting me. Anyway, skip forward. I had this counter on my calendar on my laptop, you know, that ticks away every day, a countdown thing. And it was ticking away to mid-July 10 years ago. And I was so excited. And the way that schools work, you obviously, I don't know whether you know in Canada, but here in the UK, normally you have a class for a year. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to see that bunch of children through. I didn't want to leave sort of mid-year, because it's like a family. And, you know, some of the children rely on you for all sorts of things, for breakfast or just a bit of love and company and someone to listen. It's so much more than you will learn your ABCs and things like that. So to me anyway, and I'm sure to many teachers. So yeah, I wanted to see the year through. And I was in a really lovely school at this point as well, with a fantastic head teacher, which is so important. Lovely colleagues. Why did I leave? Sounds so gorgeous. The wages were good. I think because when I got my very first teaching job, about sort of 13 years before that, I remember going to the interview and then coming home, and they usually tell you the same day. And she rang up, the head teacher rang up, and she said, I'd like to offer you the post. And my heart dropped, sank into my stomach, my boots actually, so low. And I just totally felt like I was selling my soul. And everyone around me was congratulating me. Oh, well done. You've done so well. You've got your first teaching post. And it was good. And I was grateful. And I learned a lot through doing it. But yeah, so the freeing my soul part came because over the years of teaching, I, being me, thought I could change the world. And, you know, anything that wasn't working in teaching, anything that was suppressing the children's needs or things, or even like well-being of staff and things like that, I thought I could solve it all. And I couldn't. So I taught the massage in schools, the peer massage program, which is from Sweden. I taught that through the whole school. I did yoga with everybody. I taught my class meditation. We did all sorts of wonderful things. But even after trying everything that I could possibly do, I couldn't beat the system. It was too much. I always say it's like jumping through hoops and filling in boxes. And it was more about government initiatives, being monitored. So you constantly had someone in your classroom observing you. And I thought, I've gone through all this training and all the, you know, and all this experience to still feel like a student in my own classroom, being judged constantly, very stressful, so much work, so many hats, and the overwhelm of the workload. You always felt you were 30 steps behind with all the jobs you had to do. But once it got beyond that, then it literally made me ill. So I had to leave, and I was sad to leave as well. But yeah, 10 years tomorrow.
That's crazy. And what was it like when you decided to leave? Because I know a lot of people are in situations, and I think especially with the pandemic, people are really thinking about their careers deeply and like, okay, am I even aligned with what I'm doing? Is this crushing my soul? You know, is this lighting my soul on fire? And people are really searching for what they want to do in life. And I'm curious, because that's such a huge leap and it's a scary, scary thing, especially if you don't have anything else lined up. So what was the mindset? Like, did you have something else on the side to like transition in, or did you just like jump full force and you were like, I'm just doing this and I'll figure it out as I go?
Well, I had my art degree. So I had my art going a little bit part-time, and I was selling some of my greetings cards and prints and things like that at little fairs and online as well. And I'd been writing a blog for a little while. So I'd started my blog. And at that point, I was Wendy Fairy Art. Ooh. Not that I painted fairies all the time, but I just really relate to the fairy realms and the pixies and the trees and the nature spirits. So it was Wendy Fairy Art at that point. I don't know. I was so lucky as well. I mean, they can be supply teachers. So you can, you know, if somebody's off sick, you can go on. I mean, I never went to a teaching agency, but I did contact a few schools and I did do some supply teaching for some money coming in. Yeah. So I would work 2 or 3 days a week doing supply during that transition period. This was before we decided to sell everything and run away in a van, but I did want to transition more towards my art and didn't know quite where that would lead and was really enjoying the writing and things like that. So yes, I had the supply teaching for financial backup, which was, you know, I was very grateful for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like that is important, just to know you have something until you can make it like completely doing what you want to do. I want to talk a little bit about like just your art style and how you became confident in your style as an artist, because art is one of those things. I mean, art is completely subjective, right? And it's just, yeah. I don't like to think of art as like there's good art or bad art. There's just art that you either connect with or that you don't. Mm. And I'm curious because I feel like a lot of us are so hard on ourselves. My background is actually in graphic design. So I have, you know, a little bit more of the artistic background as well. And anytime I would create projects, I'd be like, oh, this is crap. Like, you know, you just like tear apart your own artwork. Like, how do you come to a point where you're like, no, this is awesome, I'm going to sell this? And how do you just become confident in your art and know like, this is it?
Well, that's a very good question. And I haven't got there yet, Erin. Like, if somebody can help me, I'd be more than happy to hear. But yes, it's the dilemma of being an artist, isn't it? One of the things I get asked a lot is, how do you know you can sell your art? How do you know when's the right time to start selling your art? And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe sharing your process online and things like that. I think everybody's unique and it completely depends. And my art style evolved from, I've always drawn faces, even from being really little girl. So I've always been fascinated with the female form and faces. But when I went to art school, I did 4 years. So you do a foundation course and then you do your degree. And I really got into architecture and abstract and very large oil paintings. Mm. And having the space to do that in a sort of big communal studio was so freeing. And it's a completely different way of creating. I don't know if you've ever sort of done anything really big, but you're obviously using your whole body and your arm rather than just quite small and intimate like that. So that really sort of helped me develop, and I could be more expressive and brave and bold, you know, with colour and mark making and things like that. So I learned loads about being expressive when I did my degree. And then I went into teaching. You know, I had a child when I was 19, and that's an, you know, major part of my life, obviously. And so having my daughter, she changed my life in very unexpected ways. And she was sort of 3 and then 6 when I graduated. So that was an important part of it as well. And she helped me sort of develop my style, I think. Then I had this period where I needed to earn money to support her. And, you know, I felt that thing that we feel about coming in into convention. Oh, I must get a job. I must have this. I must do this. I'm a mother. I'm, you know, I've got these responsibilities. And it's good because it's important. You're obviously, when you're a parent, you're responsible for another person, another being. But at the same time, there was always that art in the background. So when I came back into my art, weird things happened, where I started drawing fairies, mermaids, and little beings, really, who I felt were little young messengers from my soul. And gradually, as I've gone through my sort of art journey, my second go at it, if you like, the little faces and figures that I've been drawing have grown up. So there must be some psychology in there somewhere, especially with all the little creatures and figures that show up in my art journals. Yes, I definitely got into folk art and faces and intuitive art. And there was a lot of art, mixed media art journaling going on. And one of the people I will mention is Melody Ross, who ran something called the Brave Girls Club. And that really influenced me because she did a lot of journaling. And so that led me into the journaling part as well. Can't remember the rest of the question.
No, yeah, that's really good. Just like how becoming confident in your style. And when did you feel comfortable enough to start selling what you were doing too?
I just started selling it, really. And I'm the kind of I'm quite a doer. I'm quite an action person. And I don't mind falling flat on my face either. I mean, I don't love that aspect of it, but some people say, oh, well, you're so brave. And some people might say, oh, you're just maybe not brave. You're just stupid, because I will put myself out there when I feel ready. So when I had left my teaching job and I was doing my supply teaching, I started getting some cards printed. And again, I come back to the support of my partner, James, because he was, you know, really forefront in pushing me, like, just let's make some cards and let's see how they do and things like that. I wasn't really selling my originals at that point. As I sold my house, I had an original sale and I just thought, I'll just sell everything. And I did. I sold everything. So that was lovely. And there's one particular friend who's called Tracy. She basically bought most of it. And I love her to bits forever because she's such a lovely, lovely woman. But yeah, I just kind of did.
Yeah.
I didn't really look at it and go, is it good enough? I didn't really think about it. I just kind of jumped and did it. And I thought, well, if it's good enough, surely people will buy it.
And I feel like a lot that goes into it too is just like having the confidence and be like, no, I'm just going to sell it. And then people will buy it. Like if you're like, this is my art, it's amazing. And you elude that confidence and you're so, you know, proud of what you've done, people buy into that as well. And they're like, oh, wow. Yeah, you're right. And I think when you're unsure of yourself and you're doubting yourself, that also transpires through and people read that energy or see that. So you just have to dive into the deep end sometimes. And I really like that mindset of just don't think, just do. And then you adjust and you learn along the way too. You're like, okay, maybe this didn't work and this did. And I like what you mentioned about not being afraid of falling on your face, because I think that's a big fear of a lot of people, or, you know, being like, okay, I'm going to sell this and then nobody buys it. But it's like, okay, so what if nobody buys it, you know?
Yeah, paint something else. Just exactly, keep going. Exactly. I can't remember whose favorite, it was a quote. I don't know if it's an Andy Warhol quote or a Matisse quote that says, you know, don't make art for anyone else, just and let them judge it. Just make art for yourself and then let them judge it. But don't, yeah. I mean, when I moved to Glastonbury, for example, you know, I got told, maybe if you put the tour, that there's a Glastonbury tour. I don't know if you know about it, but it's a really famous place that's supposed to be the Isle of Avalon. Mm-hmm. And it's the heart chakra of the world, if you're into the kind of geonomics of everything. Is that the right word? The grid, the energy grid of the earth.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to, because that wasn't what was coming from me. And I'm sure I could have sold a load of cards in the shops in Glastonbury if I put the tour with the mermaid or the fairy. But yes, I'm very much, this is kind of what I do. For example, when I started the YouTube, I didn't look at any other artists because I didn't want to be following anyone else. There's some YouTube channels I absolutely love, and they're not really art content. And it's not that I don't like the art content, but I do think that there's a lot of people that watch it that are artists, and it all ends up as the same kind of momentum, if you like. And I didn't know what I wanted to be online, the same way I didn't really know, and I don't know still, how my paintings are going to develop over the next few years. So I just kind of close off and then go within. And I think what one important point to just add in as well is, if you're not the kind of person that just kind of does it and learns along the way, you know, maybe you're the type of person that needs to kind of really fine tune their work, whether it be a painting or a piece of music or whatever it is. Or, you know, you might want to do a podcast, but you might not want to do a kind of, right, I'm just going to jump in podcast. You might want to do a, I'm going to practice in private first and then jump in. I think we're all different. And you know, there are some people that don't like falling on their face either. Yeah, so it's a case of finding what works for you and what feels right for you, in my opinion. And go and sit under a tree or on a beach or on the top of a mountain and just, even just putting your hands on your heart and really connecting and sitting like really quietly and finding out what you want. You know, we live such busy lives, don't we, where we're just, it's, everything's chaotic and there's bombardment from every direction when we leave our house. Even if we don't leave our house, if we're online all day, just time to get quiet, find out what you want. And yes, get inspired by others. And if you, you know, want to be on YouTube, for example, I mean, I used to watch all sorts of things. I think, oh, I actually really like the way they've done that. Or I like the way that that's a camera angle here, or the lighting, or, you know, kind of the pace of a video, or whatever it is, and just take those little pieces, like putting together a cake or something, rather than just copying someone else, which then comes back to the authentic thing, doesn't it?
Exactly. It's not true to you. I love, love, love that you say that, and that you very much just tuned everything else out. One of my concerns with like everything being so digital and everyone being so connected more now than ever is, we're losing those moments to just be with ourselves, because I just think, you know, anytime you're waiting in line somewhere, people just whip out their cell phones. There's no time to just think, to be with yourself and reconnect with yourself. And that's something that I really prioritize in my own life, is being able to like connect back with my intuition and be like, wait, what do I want? Because I don't know if you're into astrology or not, but I have like very mutable signs, so I can very easily adapt to what's around me and the energy that's around me. So if I don't consciously take that effort to come back to myself, I can very easily lose myself. And that's something I'm learning as I go. But I think that is tricky, because people who are, you know, starting out, someone who wants to be an artist, like we get inspired by what other people are doing, and maybe we take on what they're doing without even realizing that we're doing it, without even connecting back to ourselves. And that's when it can go down a path where you become completely unaligned with what you're doing. And I don't know, you end up having like an identity crisis almost down the way.
I did that. I did that, you know, when I left my teaching job and I was looking around at artists and stuff. You know, I was completely drawn into other artists and what they were doing and having a go. But it wasn't the stuff I was going to sell. There might be things in my journal that, you know, but it wasn't something I was going to sell. And I think that's the difference. Mm-hmm. So quite recently, I copied a Paul Besson painting, the Art Nouveau movement. And I did it as part of a project in my online community. But I knew I wasn't going to sell that piece. I just wanted to learn some of his techniques and some of, you know, why he'd done certain things. And the only way to do that is to copy. Mm-hmm. So I think there's different. It's really difficult, isn't it? I think there's such a gray area with plagiarism. And I've noticed since I've become more visible online, other people pulling things from me and taking ideas and things like that. And sometimes obviously taking everything I do and then, you know, pitter-pattering away. But again, it's like, I think at first it bothered me a little bit because it was quite hard to suddenly come out on YouTube and then be in a space. So I was just finding my feet myself.
Yeah.
But now, you know, you can see it happening and it doesn't matter because there's another artist, wasn't it? Was it Andy Warhol again that said, you know, nothing's original. Nothing's original. It's always a little patchwork pieces of other people. And I think there's an element of truth in that. Mm-hmm. And also, we're all connected in this very strange energetic way anyway. So especially with the online thing. So, you know, we're bound to influence each other. It, you know, in good ways and bad ways. And I think what you said before about the whole online thing, it comes down to noticing when you yourself are not in that your center and you're not being that word authentic. It's going to come up again, isn't it? But that's the bit to notice, and then to go inner compass, need to just change direction a little bit. I mean, I always advise people when they're saying, oh, you know, I feel like my work's just following this person and this person, or just right, shut them off, you know, and don't follow them anymore. Don't look anymore. Leave it for 6 months, come back to it later and then see where you develop, because it's so, so difficult. Everything's so loud, isn't it? It chatters at you all the time.
Yes, totally. I love that you say that because I completely agree too. And I think it is important, especially when you are trying to find your own unique style, to see what you are drawn to by other people. Because obviously I like to think, you know, everything in life is a mirror. So what you're drawn to in other people is obviously something you see in yourself as well. But it's not copying step by step, like, okay, this is exactly what made this person successful. I'm going to do that. I'm going to copy their style. It's taking elements that you like and making it your own, or learning different techniques and seeing how you can transform that into your own style. And then that's what's going to help you grow and become your own artist at the end of the day. And if you're inspired by a painting and want to try it out yourself, you know, try it out yourself. But as you said, you know, that's not something you're going to sell at the end of the day, but it's fun just to get creative and do something a little bit different and push your own boundaries. Because a lot of the times too, we can get stuck, very stuck, or in ruts or in creative ruts. And sometimes it helps to try something completely different or take on a different style just to open something within your own mind and get the tables turning again. And I think that is really important. I've also gone through phases online where I feel like I've had to like either block certain people or mute them or unfollow them completely, because you find yourself being, I don't know what the right word is, but like too attracted to what they're doing or something, or you're trying to emulate it a little too much. So it is important to have that awareness that when you're like, oh, I love what this person is doing and that worked for them, I'm going to do that as well. But having that awareness to come back to yourself and know that no two people are ever going to have the same journey. Like, it's just not going to, what made someone else successful is not necessarily going to work out for you. And coming back to that authenticity, like, people are really drawn to authenticity and want to follow along with someone who is just being their true selves. I'm curious if you've read the book Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I feel like that touches perfectly on sort of what you were just talking about, you know, how we're all so connected and ideas just kind of flow from person to person. Yeah.
I find yes, the ideas fairy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Absolutely.
I would love to talk a little bit about your art journaling. Because I mentioned before we started recording that I initially found you on YouTube due to some of your art journaling videos. And I was just so drawn in because I was just looking up different ways of journaling, because journaling completely transformed my life. It made me so much more self-aware. And it really made me reflect on patterns and things in my life that were constantly coming up. And I owe a lot of my personal growth to journaling over the past couple of years. And yeah, I fell in love with your art journaling videos. I just thought it was so creative. It was so cool. I'd never seen anything like that before. And I'm curious, you know, how you got started into that. Like, did you physically write out before you switched into art journaling? Like, how did that whole journey transpire, and how has journaling helped you on your life journey as well?
So as I mentioned, Melody Ross, she's was a really big influence. And just before I left my my house and mortgage and everything. We ran away in a van, which was, when was that? That was about 2013. So basically she was running something called the Brave Girls Club, and she had a course on there, a couple of courses, but one of the courses was called Life Restoration. And I was in a really difficult situation because I was living in my dream home and I was about to run away in a van, a really small van as well. And this life restoration was really talking to me, but I didn't have the finances to pay for the course, which was about $75 or something like that. So not expensive. It was like a 6-week kind of thing. And she was offering 10 free spaces on the course. And so I had to comment and do a few things to enter this competition, and I won. So the last few weeks in my house, I literally spent doing this life restoration course. And she provided a lot of the materials, and I had a special journal. I wish I had it to show you, actually, because all her beautiful artwork and things that she sent that you could then collage. So I found magic in collaging, and I hadn't really found that before. And so that was quite surprising. So I thought the combination, this is how it grew anyway, the combination of writing, painting, drawing, and collaging, this mixed media aspect started coming into it for me. And just the magic of having, say, for example, a quote you love, doing a visual response to that quote, whether it's, oh, I'm just going to paint my page turquoise and pink and put some lines on it, and then pasting this quote down on that page was kind of life-changing. And so throughout the journey of doing that, it really helped me, doing her course, Life Restoration, it really helped me ask the question, what do I want? What do I want? And the sacred, she also talked about something called the sacred yes. So boundaries. So this is a big thing for everybody I know, yes. Most people, don't want to say everyone, but boundaries. So I really kind of started to think about my decision-making process through the journaling and looking at what I was saying yes to. And so now when I'm trying to make a decision, it's more like, if I say yes to this, what am I saying no to? And is the thing I'm saying no to more important than the thing I'm saying yes to, which can happen. Mm-hmm. So I'm getting used to letting people down and letting people become a bit disappointed because you've let them down, and that feels a bit uncomfortable, and just getting used to that really. But yeah, so that's kind of where I got with my journaling, and I did several years with my art journals and the travels, and so that process evolved over those 7 years. And I did a lot of online retreats, worked my way through countless journals, different sizes, and so my artwork developed and my journaling developed. And sometimes an art journal page for me can look like just a load of writing, just free writing. Yeah, so it can be like a page of free writing. And sometimes it's a page of collage that looks a little bit like a vision, what people might think of as a vision board, to bring things into to your life, or to remind you of things that you want, but you forgot about and you want to redirect towards that. Or it could be quite a nice fine art painting with some words written over it, or it totally depends. And I think for me, the thing I learned about art journaling was not to have any rules.
Yes.
And not to be judgy on yourself when it's something on the page. And if it looks scruffy and rubbish and you don't like it, it doesn't matter. I mean, you can either collage and paint something over the top, or just leave it and go, well, I didn't like that page, but then maybe I was grumpy.
Totally. Yeah, I was going to mention, like, with the collaging, it sounds very vision board like, because it's very much what you're thinking in that moment, or what you aspire in your life kind of thing. And
it's interesting to hear from you that your journaling changed. Can we find out how that happened?
Yeah, well, I just think, like, mine, I was always so scared to start journaling because I was like, oh, there's all these rules, and like people who bullet journal and stuff, you know, they're so creative with it. And I just thought it had to be a certain way. So I was always nervous to start journaling. And then I just sat down and I was like, I'm just going to write a page a day and just see what comes up. So that's exactly what I did. I just sat down and I'd write a full page. And some days, or if I had something really big on my mind, I'd just write until I couldn't write anymore. And the things that would start coming up made me realize a lot about myself that I maybe never would have realized had I never had written it out, type of thing. And as I got more and more into journaling, I decided to start looking up you know, get inspired by how other people journal. So I started looking on YouTube to see different ways of journaling. And that's when I stumbled on the art journaling. And I just thought that was so fascinating because I've done things like vision boarding in the past, but I feel like I need to set up an actual art journal and just go with the flow. Cause I mean, I have all my painting gear too, and just see what comes up. And I think that's the mindset a lot of people might have, is like, oh, but what if it's not good enough? Or what if it's not this or not that? But there's no rules. It's just for you. It's not like you have to post it online or you have to sell it or anything like that. Like, it's literally just for you. And if you want to paint the page pink, just paint the page pink and move on, you know, and just see how things transpire in that moment. So I think it's truly inspiring what you do with your journal. Yeah, it's definitely inspired me to get a lot more creative with my journaling as well. I'd love to talk a little bit about your van life, because I'm just genuinely curious about van life. And you said you did it back in 2013. I mean, this is like before Instagram was even a thing, or before social media really even blew up, because I feel like van life is very much a trendy thing now. And a lot of people are embarking upon that journey and deciding to, you know, just escape and do the whole van thing. So you were definitely ahead of the times with this. I'm curious, you know, what drew you to van life? And I would also love to know some of the challenges that come along with it, because I think, you know, seeing it all on social media, it looks so fun and quote unquote glamorous, if you will, but I'm sure it's not glamorous at all. But yeah, I'm just genuinely curious about your experience on that and why you decided to go ahead and do that.
So we had a mortgage, we both had jobs, and we felt we were both sort of early to mid 40s. I think, how old I've been? I'd have been early 40s. So I just sort of flipped into my, is it your Uranus opposition? I think it's your Uranus. I think that's what they call the midlife crisis.
Okay.
So I knew, because you mentioned astrology. I'm really into the astrology stuff. Same. But anyway, that time, James and I, so my partner James, he is a year younger than me. So we're both kind of the same age, and we both have the same, well, in the same week is our birthday in April. We're just kind of the same age. And so it hit us both at the same time. And it was just after I'd kind of decided to free my soul and leave my teaching career. And we hadn't decided whether we were selling our house or not, but we were going to some really sort of alternative type festivals. So we were seeing some off-grid stuff, if you like, people who were living in horse trucks and showing you around as part of the festival and things like that. And there was one festival we used to go to every year called the Off-Grid Festival. And most of their power and everything on all the stages, it was small, was off grid. And so we started doing some volunteering at the festies and having, you know, a little bit more involvement in that and finding out things. And we also got our first van, which we bought off two people that they were friends, basically. We didn't know them before, but they became friends. So we bought our first van, which is a really small van. You couldn't stand up in it. It was basically a Mercedes Vito, which is what we've got now. So we've come back to that. And it was half kitted out as a camper van because the people that owned it before us had basically kitted it out as a really low tech, lo-fi camper van. And yeah, these guys became friends, as I said. Anyway, we bought this van, Dom, was the van. And so we were going to festies in the van, and James was doing little tweaks and mods and changing things. And we had, you know, a little kitchen unit that he built and then modified. And he used to put this awning outside that I don't know how he constructed it, but it was so cute. Really low tech sort of thing. We just got the bug, I think. Anyway, to cut a long story short, we were living in the house, and through that process, having the midlife crisis or Uranus opposition or whatever you want to call it, but basically feeling really trapped in a mortgage, trapped in the sense I'm paying for my existence. I'm paying a lot for my existence. There was a few kind of other things that were kind of, I don't know, up in the air at the time, like, you know, maybe the neighbors were getting really noisy. And that was kind of a bit weird because it wasn't a peaceful place anymore. A couple of things like that, you know, that sort of make little triggers, little highlights, if you like, little pointers in, oh, actually, maybe this direction. But it was James that one day said, because we were looking at our options, we'd looked at a couple of rental properties, sort of more in the countryside, really, with a lower rent than our mortgage was, because at the time mortgages were huge and rents were quite low. It's kind of the opposite here now. So we'd looked at a couple of rental properties and I was really excited to rent because I find it exciting to kind of have options that you wouldn't perhaps buy. I mm-hmm. felt a little bit stuck with a mortgage. So James said to me one day, how about we just sell everything and run away in our van and just go to Europe without a plan?
Oh, that's amazing.
That's how that idea started. And when things got harder, he always said to me, I'm really sorry, this was completely my idea. But I was totally up for it without a doubt. I mean, we both had sort of hesitations about certain elements of it, but we were so excited. And so that's how that kind of happened.
That's amazing.
And the hard bits about van life, to answer the second part of the question.
Yeah.
There were tons for me and not as many for James. Mm. So I think this comes down to, you know, the classic female needs versus the classic male needs. Comfort for me, bearing in mind I wasn't in my 20s doing a, you know, a crazy van life adventure. I was in my 40s. And that's very different. You know, you feel very different. And it's wonderful. I mean, growing old is wonderful. And it's certainly a journey and interesting. And there's obviously going to be positives and negatives. But, you know, I was a woman in my early 40s. And I wasn't sure how I was going to get all my needs met, you know, basic things. You know, even having the space to stand up in the van became a real problem because you couldn't stretch out properly if the weather was bad. Mm. Not having a fridge in that van became a real problem. So, you know, fairly quickly, I think within a year, we kind of upgraded quite a few basic things. But even beyond that, when I had the van with all the comforts, yeah, it couldn't tick all my boxes. The comfort boxes, it was too difficult. I mean, at the time, I was still dyeing my hair. So when we did sort of stay at campsites and things like that, normally they just had a shower. You just had a shower. There was no kind of over a bath, you know, color your hair situation. And you don't really want to be walking around a campsite with sort of, you know, strange hair stuff dye on your head. It was just really stupid little things like that, that would, you know, to take care of myself. And it was really weird because once I stopped traveling, I then wanted to grow my hair out. So it was just a real, you know, if I've done that earlier, that would have been much easier for me. And of course, like monthly moon cycles and things like that can be challenging in the van. Yeah, comfort needs were difficult. And I think the thing in the van for me that was the hardest thing of all was the privacy thing. So for example, in our very smallest van, if I wanted privacy, and this I always used to joke to people, and it wasn't a joke because I did actually used to do this. I just say to James, I just do that.
Cover your face, yeah.
Because that was the only way I could actually get some privacy.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I mean, we all have different levels of needs of being on our own and private and things like that, and that changes and fluctuates as we go through life, I think. But yeah, that was really hard for me. I just wanted to be on my own a little bit.
Yeah.
Which isn't any discredit to him, because he's wonderful company and he's really laid back. Without that, I don't think I could have sustained it for so long.
Yeah, I guess it's definitely a good relationship test for a lot of people, I'm sure, as so many more people are embarking on the van life journey, really tests you because you are living in such a small space with the person that you're with. Yeah, I did a trip in 2018. I did 3 months abroad through Southeast Asia and Australia and New Zealand because I always, you know, dreamed of being a digital nomad and just being on the go. But during that 3 months, my biggest realization was how much I loved having a home base and living out of a suitcase, you know, seems like such a dream, but it's very challenging. And not having, you know, especially if you are someone who loves having that cozy vibe around you and just having something that's your own. Yeah. I found it very, very challenging after a while. And I thoroughly looked forward to getting home and starting a routine again and all of that. But you have a van again now. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you, is that more for just like little trips here and there rather than like full-time van life?
Absolutely.
Living?
Absolutely. I'm not going back full-time, Erin.
Yeah.
I like what you said about the backpacking thing. I've backpacked a little bit and I have to say van life was easier because you've got more stuff with you and you've got that nest.
Yeah.
And you might get on quite well with that, actually. You know, maybe sort of periodically. And I think if I was to do that again, if I was to say go away for 3 months on a trip, which isn't on the plan at all, it's not on my horizon right now, but maybe in a few years I might change my mind. But if I was to do that again, I don't know if I could give up my actual home.
Yes.
And actually have that no nest thing. I would need to know that my nest was there, even if I was renting it out or something, if it was my own place. And the other thing you mentioned is routine. That was key for me to maintain specifically a morning routine every single day of my travels. And landing as well, because landing after a long period of travels was harder in a way than any of it. For both of us, it was really hard to land. And so having that morning routine to sustain through thick and thin has probably helped my mental health as much as journaling.
Yeah, honestly, there's so much power in routine, and you don't realize until maybe you are plucked completely out of routine, but having it can really just, you know, provide that peace back into your soul a little bit. How would you say that the van life affected your art? Do you feel like you grew a lot from it? You gained new perspective creatively? Because I'm sure that did have a big influence on how you create.
It definitely did, because it gave me the luxury of time. I had all that time on my hands. I know people might wonder, you know, how is she supporting herself financially? I was basically living by the seat of my pants on my savings that I had got from the house. So the house sale, it didn't make a profit because the market had gone all funny, but we did get a chunk of money. And James was a digital nomad. He was able to work online through the whole travels. Mm-hmm. So he's helped sustain that as well. My artwork, because I had time, the luxury of time on my hands for the first time really in my life, because my early art career and degree and studying, things like that, I had my daughter. So that was time split. Obviously then my daughter grew up and I wasn't teaching anymore, and I didn't have these financial commitments because we didn't have, you know, financial outgoings like we had before. We've got it really low. We were very frugal with our money. So that gave me the luxury of the time. And then obviously I could sit and create, I could sit and get inspired. Part of my process is being inspired. And so all the things that inspire me, I spent time doing, whether that's online presences, online workshops. I used to do a lot of free online kind of things, listening to all sorts of different people from all sorts of walks of life and learning about all sorts of different things, and then looking into the things from there that really inspired me. And sort of what I used to do as well, which I think really helped me, was doodle while I was listening to these inspirational talks. So I'd have my journal all the time with me, even if it was just a pencil, but often I'd have some watercolors or something as well. And I'd be writing things down and doodling, and that might be a little face or a little mermaid or a fairy, and then colour that in and then decorate the page and that kind of thing, without worrying about the outcome at all. But just that it was like a little reminder page of, oh, yeah, you really pulled that out of that talk and that really inspired you. And just having that, this little book of inspiration to finish up with. One of my journals is full of that. Mm-hmm. I think that, without me knowing, had really impacted on my artwork, especially when I got back into the studio and I did land after van life and I was able to paint properly again for the first time in years.
Yeah. It's almost like you're like, I'm like back in my studio life, and that freedom just comes to you with all these new inspirations. I love that. Yeah. I would love, just to wrap things up, if you could let us know where we can find you online and what are the best ways to connect with you.
I think my number one place where I am mostly present is Instagram. I am on Facebook, but I don't direct people there really. I'm on Instagram as the Unexpected Gypsy. My Patreon page, which has grown since the lockdown, I've been on there a year and a bit now, and that's where I do a lot of my art process, the behind the scenes stuff. And but yeah, probably YouTube. I usually make weekly videos. I feel myself slowing down a little bit now, but there's quite a few videos up now. I think the YouTube is probably, it's easier to watch a video in a way, isn't it, than read a blog in a way as well. Yeah, those are my three places, I think. Instagram, Patreon, and YouTube. Yeah.
That's amazing. I'll link everything in the description too, so everyone can find you. But thank you so much, Wendy. This was great. I loved chatting with you.
I love chatting with you as well. I really, really did. Let's do it again.
Yes.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode with Wendy. I wanted to leave you with a few of my favorite takeaways from this episode. So number one was definitely follow what feels good. And I think Wendy is such a perfect example of someone who just did things because she truly enjoyed it. And her authenticity is what began to build a community of support and like-minded people around her. She didn't set out creating for vanity metrics of any sorts, but she just did it for the pure love of her craft. And I feel that really, really shines through with all of her content. Number two is where there's a will, there is always a way. And I think Wendy's journey to self-employment and that freedom lifestyle is very much like many other people's. Like, you don't necessarily just jump off the deep end without having anything lined up, but you have, you know, those part-time gigs or those other sources of income that sustain you during those transitional phases. Number three would be, if you're a creative and you want to start selling your work, then just do it. I really liked what Wendy said too about not being afraid to fall flat on your face. It's definitely not a comfortable feeling, but sometimes we have to do that in order to grow and to learn. And if no one likes what you're selling, then hey, no big deal. You know, just paint something else, adjust, learn, grow, and keep going. Number four would be stay in your own lane. So important. It's an amazing thing to be inspired by what other people are doing, but that should never be, you know, the art that you sell at the end of the day or the face that you show the world. Take lots of quiet time to connect with yourself, recenter, and do what feels right to you. And take those inspirations, but make them your own. You are definitely unique in your own way. So why would you want to be a carbon copy of someone else? And number five, there is power in routine. Another thing I really enjoyed hearing about was Wendy's story of van life and how it impacted her art and how she was able to draw inspiration from it. But I also found it really interesting hearing about the challenges and sort of those realizations that she had during the course of her van life journey. And, you know, just how much power there actually is in routine. And that's something I've definitely learned myself through, you know, a 3-month travel trip that I took as well. So yeah, those are some of my favorite takeaways from today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. I will leave all of Wendy's details in the description box for you to take a peek at, and you can go and connect with her there. Otherwise, I will catch you in the next episode, and don't forget to leave a little rate and review if you enjoy listening along.